This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Roger Mann,
Finlay Mason,
Eric Franklin,
and I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now Eric, you retired in Palmerston North.
In 1998. Okay, I was made redundant. Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah. but it was moving into the retirement phase of your life, or did you get another job after that?
No, that was the last job I had.
Okay.
Yeah.
So was it a big adjustment?
Yeah, obviously, although I always knew that from what my previous history, that if you want to meet people, do things, you've got to get another interest. So I took up bowls and got involved with the Takaro Sports Club. And that really relieved any sense of monotony or anything like that.
Did that form social life then?
No. In fact, I didn't do that until I was wrong. I painted the house and then we shifted to New Plymouth because one of our children was in New Plymouth. We stayed there for about 18 months, 2 years, and then came back again because they should have came back. And at that stage, I took up bowls.
Okay.
How long had you been in Palmerston North, resident in Palmerston North, before retirement?
About 8 or 9 years. Okay. Yeah.
So you got fairly well established in the city.
Yeah, but I didn't, because of the nature of the job that I had as regional manager, I was on circuit quite often out of the city. Yeah. And so I didn't take up any particular sport or other interest because I could never guarantee that I'd be able to go to it.
Given that was also the nature of your work, for sort of social life, were you reliant on your wife for making social contacts?
Not really. We didn't have a lot of social contact, one might say, except family.
Okay.
At that stage. In fact, our major social contacts, I would say, have been made since we came to MetLife.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. Eric, were you ever in anything like Rotary or Lions? Or
I was in JC's.
Oh, JC's, yeah.
In Huntley.
And, oh, okay.
And then in Whanganui.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
No.
And, of course, JC's doesn't exist now, don't they?
No, and they had a cut-off of 40 years.
Yeah, 40,
too,
yeah. Mm. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, I was in JC's in Martin, too.
So for future listeners, what sort of things did JCs do?
They were like Lions and Rotary, basically.
I think it stands for Junior Chamber of Commerce.
Junior Chamber of Commerce. But it was
fundraising and community activities.
Yeah, community. But it altered, I think, in later days to self-improvement rather than...
A bit like Toastmasters
it could be. But it's folded up now, as I understand. Yeah.
Through what, lack of interest or a sore
blood? I was out before that happened, so yeah. I can't really say.
People do tend not to join organisations in the same way now, or at least younger ones do.
So.
Right. I mean, probably if you've got both in a couple, both people working, then it makes it harder for them to have time for...
Yeah.
Anyway, retirement then. So
yeah, I was made redundant at that stage. The whole department, or the courts division of the department, was being restructured. It had become the courts department, and then shifted again back to the justice department. And there was a sense by government, I guess, or those who advised them, that the whole outfit needed a makeover. And that they could make major improvements. And I must say that after 20-odd years, the backlog of court cases is now higher than what it was when I was involved. So the improvements, I don't think, have occurred. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of people with high qualifications that served a lot of self-interest and thought they had answers and had the gift of the gabber. That didn't actually work too well.
So a lot of people were laid off and they lost a lot of institutional...
They weren't... Well, yeah, there were a lot of people at a senior level. Their intellectual knowledge of the courts division at that time was almost wiped. at a high level. Anyone from registrar and above basically went. And that included people in head office too.
Now, so was this a political move then? Because sometimes I think if you just have all your own people in a certain area, you can get the changes you want.
Well, there's that, yeah. But I've pointed out that in my view, the changes they made haven't been effective.
Because the objective of the exercise was to improve the waiting time for court.
No, don't think so. Well, that would be part of it. That was always the argument. But I think it's hard to be objective about those sorts of things, isn't it?
Yes. Okay. So you say it wasn't really forced retirement or redundancy or whatever. Were you eligible for work-related or pension?
I had work-related pension, yeah. Okay. And that's all I lived on, all the family lived on for until I was 65 when we got the New Zealand Super.
Mm.
And we shifted, as I said, and then back again.
Did you still have school-aged children at that time?
I think they'd all left. Yeah, at that stage.
Where did you meet your what's your wife's name, Eric?
Carol.
Carol, yeah.
Yeah, we met in the court in Palmerston North.
In Palmerston North?
When I was in the early days.
Ah.
She
a Palmerston girl?
She was born in Britain. And came out here after the war. Father came to Ahakia, worked at Ahakia, and joined the Air Force.
Yep.
And she came with him, of course, and the family came. Yeah, so that's where I met her. Yeah.
Right.
Hmm. Now, you want to have a think about what I did after that. I got involved with the sports club, and... it's one of the few. When I was in New Plymouth as registrar, I was involved in a club up there which was multi-sports, and I was heavily involved in that, and we actually won the Club of the Year competition for that. It was a soccer, netball, cricket club. It had something like 20 young kids teams and whatnot.
Yeah.
When I came here in the Takaro Sports Club, it was again a multi-sports club with lawn bowls, indoor bowls, table tennis. No snooker in those days. But there is now.
Oh, there is now, yeah.
So it was a multi-sports club, and I was asked to go on the committee of the bowling club. And agreed to that, and then the treasurer of the sports club resigned or left, and they were looking for a treasurer, and they were talking about getting some outside involvement, and I didn't instinctively feel that was appropriate for a sports club. It was have an outsider telling us what we could and couldn't do, so I took over the position as treasurer and held that for about 13, 14 years. At that time, they had an overdraft of $15,000. And they had gaming machines. The old type, there was no licensing of gaming machines, basically, in those days, early days. That came in later. And I took over the management of the gaming machines. So I looked after the treasurer's job and the gaming machines for the sports club for the next probably 15, 16 years.
Until about when?
Until about 4 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. 3 years ago. In that time, we not only paid off the overdraft, which shouldn't have existed in the first place, so there was some issues relating to that. I changed the method of financial reporting and by showing each section of the club how they were doing financially, as well as the sports club, and altered the constitution and rewrote the constitution so that the sports club became had the ability to have not only sections of the sports club but affiliates, sections where their finances were handled by the sports club, and affiliates where they handled their own finances, but were subject otherwise to the constitution. And that was done to enable some sections to come there, or for other bowling clubs, if they wanted to amalgamate on that site and not necessarily have to put all their funds into the sports club. And there were consequential amendments or changes that had to be made so that the sports club remained viable. And the basis was that the bar would pay for the overheads of the sports club, and each sport would maintain their own operating expenses, whether they be in a section or an affiliate. So I managed that, and in that period, we first of all put in an artificial green, and I raised the money for that. That cost $220,000. So from starting off with a $15,000 overdraft, we had a free of cost artificial green.
So how was it raised?
About 100,000 came from the gaming machines. It was used for that. The rest we obtained grants from gaming trusts, and inspected that. Also the Eastern and Central Community Trust. We got 50,000 from the Eastern Central Community Trust for that. And that was the first artificial green in the Manawatu. And most other bowlers didn't think it was a very good idea. They chose not to use it too much. It's only in recent couple of years that it's been accepted as being a quality service sufficient to play championship bowls on, despite the fact that it was the only internationally recognised international grade green in the Manawatu. Now that'll be a controversial statement, but that's the fact, and they didn't recognise that.
Because whereabouts are the club rooms and greens?
At the corner of Botanical Road and Featherston Street.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What about the membership of the club and the age breakdown? And
the bowling club, like a lot of clubs, is gradually declined. When I first went there was over 100 members. There's now down to probably less than 50. But that's common for most bowling clubs in the Manawatu. There are some exceptions to that. When part of the reason we changed the constitution was to enable a pool club to come in, or they call it 8-ball because it's a special kind of pool. They came in. And so we, to accommodate them and give them better, to enable the table tennis and the bowls, indoor bowls, be played at the same time as pool and outdoor bowls, where the lounge facility, we needed extended lounge facilities and better facilities. So we decided we need to extend the club rooms. We put a 25 metre by 5 metre extension on. And I raised the money for that too. That cost $300,000. I raised the money for that to 90,000 from Lotto, 50,000 again from Eastern and Central. Did the strategic plan for that and feasibility study, and convinced everyone that it was a good idea.
It's so amazing what Bluff can do. Have you had much experience of this sort of thing before?
Only my background. I've been used to preparing papers and doing documents and that sort of thing in the job.
Yeah.
And I don't think people understand what people actually know until they test them, you know. Let me say this. The old state sector employee, and probably the new ones too, I can't answer for them, they had a lot of knowledge and they were pretty well trained. And to a large extent, they were ridiculed as being just another state servant, but they had a lot of latent knowledge in their background about a multitude of things.
And that they was able to take out into the community for these other areas of interest.
And really, that's what I used. this, what I did learn in the job was the power of precedent. And you look up some books and you work this out and you work that out. And that's really, when you're doing all these sort of things, all you're doing is using precedence. You know, if you want to find out how to do it, you find out how it's been done before.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, you know?
Yeah, it does.
And you solder it around. That makes it sound easy. It's not always easy. In fact, the hardest job I had when we were raising money for the extension was to convince the joker in Wellington in Internal Affairs, who was handling the lottery grants, or reporting to the lottery grants board on who should get the money, and convincing him about certain things. Every time he answered a question, he'd raise another thing. And every time he put a financial report in, he'd want another one. Because it was 6 months since he got to deal with that one, he'd want an up-to-date one. So you'd always, you know, you could never win the battle.
So, and was it mainly, in terms of the people running this, was it mainly older people who were in those positions?
Yeah, because they're the people that have the time. You know, the workforce now is 7 days a week. It was 5 days a week when I was working, basically, for everyone. But now there's not the people around who have time. They, even if they're not working 7 days a week, they might be on callback. And they're required to work when the work's available. So a lot of the, almost all the administrative work now is done by people who have retired. The others haven't got time to do it. They have, quite often, they don't have time to play the particular sport either.
No.
And that's had an effect, major effect, on a lot of clubs, as well as the liquor laws, of course.
Meaning what? The effect of the liquor laws.
Well, a lot of clubs, rugby clubs, bowling clubs, golf clubs, to maintain their viability, have a bar. And there's agitation now, and has been for some time, that they get away with murder in hours and all sorts of things. But without the liquor content, and nobody forces anyone to drink, and I don't know of anyone drinking excessively in these places. There probably are some, but I haven't noticed them. You know, we used, in the sports club, we used to have a turnover of $100,000 and make $50,000. And that $50,000 paid for the $500 a week that it costs us in overheads to run the sports club, or run the club rooms, let alone anything else.
Maintenance, power, cleaning, and all of that sort
insurance,
of thing.
$5,000 or $6,000 a year.
Yes.
City council rates, the lease from the city council.
Right.
You know? Plus the repairs and maintenance that always happen.
Okay, so now these clubs are struggling for money?
Well, I don't know whether this, I can't say that. I know that the sports club, since I left, has still got substantial financial reserves. It wouldn't be, you know, there only needs to be something go wrong and they can cut that back. And they're holding their own. But it's becoming increasingly difficult to get people who are able to give the time to administer the outfit. And, of course, the membership is dropping too, because people, no matter what sport it is, the rugby clubs are closed their club rooms and are going to, a number of them have gone into bowling clubs as their club rooms. So it's a changing...
It is.
Changing face of sport, or the non-sport side of sport.
And Eric, when you're not involved with the, weren't involved with the sports clubs and that, did you do anything else of any interest? Were you into things like modelling or stamps or anything like that?
No, not really. I'm a great reader.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. And newspaper readers and book reader.
Yeah, that's good.
Do you find that many of the people that you come across are people you had contact with in your work as well, or is that a totally separate world?
I still maintain contact with some of those I used to work with. We go and have a beer a couple of times a year, perhaps, and that sort of thing, and just to find out what's going on.
Yeah. Have you been back to Harborough High School reunions or anything like that?
No, not a great one for the reunions.
No, no.
I went to one for the primary school.
Yeah.
That was okay, but really you don't know. They've all got changed their interests.
And if you had any friends, you would have kept contact with them anyway.
The one major friend I had, he went to Aussie. And then he died over there, unfortunately. But
and you said you'd been to the top of the mountain. It's not too onerous, is it? I mean, it's a fair sort of a hike, isn't it? Mount Taranaki.
Mm. Mount Egmont.
In those days it was.
And still is. It's got the dual name now, of course.
Yes, but, that's right.
I can't remember. I think it was probably while I was still in Harborough, anyway. So it was the early days.
Yeah.
And, it wasn't too bad. You got to be a bit careful about Egmont or Taranaki.
You've got to pick your time to go, don't you?
And there's a lot of people, of course, go up there all the time.
Mm.
It's a damn sight easier going down rather than just going up, I know that. Because you can sort of ski your way through the shingle, coming down. But it's a great view from up there, and it's, And I skied about, I have been to the top here.
Yeah. Very good.
Okay, so we've got just a few minutes left, and one area we haven't really touched on much was your school days. The nature of schooling then, was it enjoyable? Was it very rigid? What springs to mind?
Well, one thing that springs to mind, and it's sports related, I was pretty keen on cricket and still am. And they selected the cricket team when we first went to high school, and you have it, your assembly those days was you assembled outside in the yard.
Mm.
I can't even remember now. I know they have a hall now, but I can't remember whether they had a hall in those days. And they were selecting the cricket team, you see. And the bloke in charge of cricket, the teacher or whatever they called in those days, selected just by you and you. So it was a great selection process. And it used to hose me off. Hose me off that you didn't even get a look in, those sorts of things.
So you weren't all playing so you could see what...
No, this was in the morning assembly. Everyone was there,
Yeah, and they hadn't seen anyone playing before, had
No. So it was a great selection policy or method.
Still caning children in those days?
We always reckoned that the joker that caned the most, he played golf and we reckon he was practising his golf swing. And the cane was used.
It was pretty awful.
Primary school, of course, it was the strap.
Your choice.
We were caned, I think, one day we were caned because... Oh, there must have been an assembly hall because we got caned for going in the assembly hall before we were supposed to.
Oh, yeah. Ridiculous, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what's your view on that? Or was it something that was resented or just accepted?
Well, it's accepted, basically.
Yeah.
Almost became a mark of achievement, I think, if you got the cane at some stage.
Yeah.
The girls could get away with murder, of course, because they never got the cane. So there's no equality in those days.
In the primary schools, they got the strap, though.
You got the strap. Yeah, you got six. Yeah, six. Well, some of them, not very often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They couldn't whack you any more than six times.
Is that what it was? Yeah. The strap in primary school.
Yes.
Mm. So what was your impression of teachers or attitude towards teachers?
There were good teachers and there were bad teachers. I can remember one teacher who the only time he taught us anything was when the headmaster was standing in the room seeing what was going on. Then he taught us. The rest of the time he let us do what we felt like doing, basically. They're silly if they think people don't notice these sorts of things. I mean, we were 15 or something like that in those days. But we knew what was going on. We weren't stupid.
Absolutely.
But he brought that particular teacher, or master or whatever he was, brought out a book later, and he got a few kudos out of that, and that's fair enough. But
do you feel that you learnt a lot in by self-direction then, or you just played up?
And oh, no, we didn't. There wasn't any playing up. I mean, people, but they didn't learn anything. They had just muddled around for that period, you know. That, and you, I mean, in those days, you had School C or UE, and it was a fair incentive. You know, I sat School C twice. I missed by 5 marks, I think, the first time. Now, of course, in these days, nobody ever fails, do they? You know, those days, you failed. Mm. If you did, if you missed by 5 marks, you failed.
And then you did it again.
Yeah, well, and you did it again, yeah.
Yeah, here it is. Now with NCEA, it's shorter pieces and you can...
Yeah, well, I, as an employer, I would not take any notice at all of NCEA. Mm. I want, when I employ somebody, I want to know what they know.
Mm.
And that doesn't tell me what they know.
No.
But I'd like to know whether they're any good at maths, and I'd like to know whether they're any good at English, because those are the two major things, in my view, that, that I want to know when I employ somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that I get that out of what what the NCA does. And now they're thinking twice about NCA, I understand.
Mm. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.